to another episode of the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and in each episode of this podcast, I talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they would give other aspiring authors. I am delighted to welcome back to the podcast Bobby Nash, an award-winning author of novels, comic books, short stories and screenplays and much more, who has over 150 writing credits to his name. As well as catching up on his latest work, I'm about to quiz him a little on how he goes about marketing his books. Apologies for the occasional interruptions from my dogs. They obviously wanted to talk to Bobby as much as I did. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, Bobby. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's really lovely to see you again.
Yes, you as well. It's always good to come back and do this again. I had so much fun when we talked last year. It was, I'm excited to be back.
We had a really good chat, didn't we? So I think what we need to do, first of all, just give us, for people who didn't hear the first interview, just give me just a little brief roundup of the kind of things you write, because I know you've written so many books that we could just talk about, you know, forever more, but just a little roundup of the kind of thing you do.
Sure. Well, I play in a lot of different genres. I've been very lucky. I get to do multiple genre stuff. Most of my novels tend to have a thriller element to them. I like to kill people. I like to put people in characters in danger and things like that. You know, a lot of action, you know, things like of that nature. So a lot of my novels tend to have kind of that thriller element to it. But I also am very fortunate that I get to do things like write some science fiction here and there, do some comics. I get to do some media tie-in stuff and play with, you know, characters I watched on TV or stuff like that. That's also fun too. So
yeah. So I'm trying to think when it was we last talked. It was probably early last summer, I think, possibly. So
sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been doing since then? I guess the rate you write at, I'm sure you must have had a few books out between then and now.
Yeah. Well, it's weird with the whole pandemic thing and everything, you know, the world kind of changing the way it has. I was doing, before all of that, I was doing three conventions or book events a month. Mm. And then we went for like 2 years where I did none. And so with all that extra, it's amazing how much extra writing you can do when you stay home.
I bet. Yeah. Especially when you're counting the travel as well. If you've got a three-day convention and travel either side and all the follow-up stuff and all that kind of thing. Yeah. Big time suck. Yeah,
because you find yourself 3 days at the con, then the day before it that you traveled, and then, man, the day after a convention weekend, I'm pretty useless, you know.
only a day.
Yeah. Well, sometimes more, but yeah. Depends on the convention.
Yeah.
But it's like suddenly it's like, man, that's like 10, 12 extra days a month that I was home, and suddenly it's like, holy cow, I can be productive. So I've got a lot of, so I've actually accomplished quite a bit in the last couple of years, year and a half. And so it was great. I caught up on my schedule because I was a little behind on what I needed to get done. And so I got caught up. I actually pulled ahead, got a couple of little extra things done. Mm-hmm. So it's been good. So I've kept busy the last year. I've tried some different things to be more productive.
Okay.
You know, because it's easy to, my fear was, one of the things I learned when I first started writing full time and staying home and doing it, when you're home, it's sometimes easy to get busy doing other things because you're home.
Or busy doing nothing. I am an expert at being busy. And I get to the end of the day and I've been busy all day. And then I think, what have I actually achieved? Nothing. Zero.
It's you know, I make this joke a lot that it's like, you know, as writers, we love to procrastinate. We all get up and go, I'm a writer, so today I'm going to write. But first,
yeah.
So we could always find something that needs to be done before we write. But I've been trying different things to stay productive. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was amazed me I have a, I do a lot of social media stuff and all, but I have a Patreon page. And so in looking for things to put on Patreon, one of the things I started doing was serialized novels.
Okay.
So I'm actually end up doing two at a time now. So I do one chapter of two different books each week.
Right.
And it's amazing how quickly, you know, in the span of 20 to 25 weeks, you've written two novels.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. And you have to write it, don't you? If you've got yeah. people who have paid to receive that chapter every week, you have mm-hmm. to write it. You've got no option of you.
So. Yeah. And so it's actually helped where, you know, I can, it's actually put out like an extra book or two a year, you know, because I've worked that into the schedule. It's a good opportunity for me to experiment because I can try something new, you know, that way, or, you know, different things. So that has actually helped me be productive and then just treat it like a job, get on schedule, sit at the desk every day, make sure I'm at the desk working. And that's the hardest part, you know,
The hardest part of being a writer is actually writing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how many hours do you think you write for a day on an average day?
My average day, I'm a night owl, so I get up. I don't get up early.
Oh gosh, so that's why you're a bit sleepy at the minute, is it? It must be quite early there.
Oh my God, yes, I have not been up long. Because I woke up and fell back asleep and did not intend to. So yeah, I was like, but so I get up. Usually, I get up in the morning, you know, a little later, and then I take care of my dad as well. So my dad, you know, I help him with cooking and he's running his errands and stuff like that. So we get up and we usually get out and either we'll go get lunch or we'll take a little short ride. We live close to a state park. We'll go sit by the lake.
Lovely.
Have some lunch. So we get up. That's usually the first thing I do in my day. We get out and we do that. Then when I come home, I go into the office and I'm in the office probably until I go do dinner. So probably about four or five hours.
Yeah.
And then I'll stop. I go cook him dinner. I cook me dinner. Then I go eat, you know, all that stuff, rest a bit or whatever. Then I usually come back at night for 2 or 3 hours.
So you're doing 7 or 8 hours of writing. Is that writing a day? Gosh.
Well, it's writing related.
Okay.
You know, because also other stuff in there. I mean, my social media stuff is in there. My working with press kits or press releases or promotion and reaching out to conventions or setting up interviews and all that stuff is wrapped up in that time as well. But it would be great if I could write for like 8 hours a day. But I tend to break it up with other stuff because I also, you know, I work for publishers, but I also do my own. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of promotion work that gets done during the day. Various things like that, dealing with setting up conventions or having conversations with publishers or having conversations with cover artists or things like that.
All the admin that goes with writing a book. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
You mentioned promotion there. I would love to, because I mean, you're an established writer. You've been writing for a long time and you have a lot of books behind you. I think promotion marketing is something that a lot of new authors don't think about. I mean, the number of people who'd send me a book for editing and for publishing, and then they're like, okay, well, how do I get my book to sell? And I'm kind of, have you not thought about that before now? You know, so what kind of ways do you go about promoting your books? I would love to know.
Well, sure. Yeah. Because the promotion is a weird thing too, because I was just talking about this with somebody yesterday. It's weird. What works this week won't work next week. Because promotion is an odd thing. It's, but I'm very self-taught. So all of this is from experience and, you know, I learned what works by screwing up a lot. So,
best way.
Yeah. But I you know, you can't just, promotion can't just be you telling people to buy my book.
Yeah.
You know, you see those, I mean, obviously you've got to do that to a degree, but, you know, there's a lot of people that that's all they do. It's like, here, buy my book. Here's the link. Here's the link. And we ignore those. Yeah. I ignore those. We all do. It's just, we hate being sold. So I had to start thinking of ways to get people interested in my books without trying to sell it to them, mm-hmm. which seems counterproductive, but that I found that works better. If I'm hard selling or trying to convince you to buy my book, our instinct is to go no.
Right. Yeah.
But I've discussed, so things that I've discovered pre-promotion, like you said, have you not thought about this before? Pre-promotion is an amazing tool. Mm-hmm. Talking about, you know, especially if you're, you know, if you're building followers with social media or your website or whatever, you know, I found things like, hey, you know, here's your post. Hey, I'm working on book title and I did some research today, and you talk about the research. I haven't tried to sell you anything,
yeah,
but I've planted the seed of, hey, I'm writing a book. Yeah. Here's what it's about. And you talk about the process of working on the book. You talk about the things you do. You know, I was at a convention today. We talked about blah, 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 you know, or, you know, cover reveals are a great way to promote, you know, you can actually, cause you can tease it, you know, the cover reveal to Evil Intent is coming tomorrow. And then tomorrow you reveal that's two promotion opportunities.
Do you ever use opportunities like that to get feedback? I mean, do you put out a selection of covers to people maybe, and things like that?
I have done that before. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was doing my second novel, was called Deadly Games. And I put together like a six pack of different cover ideas of what I thought with different fonts and things like that, and solicited feedback, not only from just people on social media, but also to friends and people who do covers and do books and got opinions. And so, yeah, so it's always nice to get feedback from people, you know, readers, the Patreon folks give me feedback on the serialized books or things like that. So, yeah, so it's always nice to get out and reach out to different people and doing various things. I sometimes put samples, you know, here's a little bit from today's writing and here's a paragraph or things like that.
Yeah. It's funny. I did that. I wrote a novel. I did NaNoWriMo last November. Mm-hmm. I attempted it back in, 2011, I think. I did 3,000 words and then stopped, and then meant to do it the next year and the next year and the next year and never did. And I actually sat down and did it last year. And I mean, I don't know if this novel will ever see the light of day. I'd like to think it will at some stage. But I shared a few little bits of that just on my Facebook, and the response that I got from people was amazing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just little a paragraph here and there. It's a really good way to, and people say, oh, yeah, I really want to read this when it comes out. Now, I'm not an established novelist like you are, and I was getting that feedback. So I can see how that must be really powerful when you've got fans.
Yeah. It's also very empowering to make you want to keep going because you've got good feedback. And so you're like, ooh, it excites you, you know, it makes you want to keep writing. And so there is definitely that give and take, that back and forth. And it's, you know, it's great getting that feedback. It's great finding, because as much as I think everything I write is great, there are times where things don't come across, or, you know, not everybody has the same frame of reference. Mm-hmm. So you sometimes can write things that make total sense to you, but other people, you know, go, that doesn't track with me, you know, because we all have different backgrounds, different ways of doing things and that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I live in Georgia, the Southeast United States. So I sometimes, you know, little Southern isms go in, you know, local kind of quirks go in to where sometime out in California goes, I don't get that. What does that mean? And so I have to be conscious of that. Although I do set some of this stuff in the South, so I can kind of go, well, they're there, but you know, you have to but you still don't, you know, I'm not just writing for people in the South. So,
yeah,
so I try to be conscious of that, of not doing too much of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of UK crime novels I read. There's a publisher called Joff Books who have lots and lots of crime novel authors on their books. And they tend to put out collections of the first five books or the first seven books. And at the end, there's always a glossary because the books are very British. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole glossary. So I guess they must have quite a big market in America. People going, well, I don't understand what this is. Yeah, what's a bat? What's a car? What's
because certain words, you know, are different, you know, or, you know, certain words don't translate to different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's one of those weird, you know, oddities of the craft, but yeah.
So alongside the social media, what other, I guess the conventions were a big part of your marketing, but what else have you been doing while they've not been going on in terms of sort of PR?
Podcasts and virtual panels. A lot of conventions did virtual conventions when they couldn't do them in person. So things like, you know, using Zoom and StreamYard and Skype, things like that to do book topics and book talks, kind of like what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Those have been great. You know, I always said, imagine had this quarantine happened pre-internet.
I don't want to
yeah.
imagine. Yeah.
at least this way we can still, you know, communicate. Because you know, back then you know, we had phones, but man, it was long distance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to do that. I'm talking to people from around the world, you know, from the comfort of my office here.
Yeah.
And so that has been helpful, doing stuff like that. There were several libraries last year that were doing author tours or book tours.
Okay.
And so they would just interview people. And so I interviewed with libraries across the country, mm-hmm. and they would just release them on their website.
So I guess that's an opportunity that you wouldn't have had.
Right.
Presumably, without the pandemic, because they'd be doing in-person tours,
right,
and you're limited to where you can travel to, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, because travel gets expensive, and you know, so I was able to do stuff out in California, and you know, New York and Chicago and Texas, and you know, stuff like that. Places I don't. It's a bit pricey for me to travel to.
Yeah.
And so that was nice. You can kind of reach a new market, and hopefully there's people there, you know, because I found when you go to places where you've never been before, you're kind of the shiny new thing. And I did a convention just this past weekend in Biloxi, Mississippi, which I've never been to before. And so that was nice. So I got to go, and it was, you know, people down there who had never seen me before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a couple of fans in the area that came out. And so that was really nice. Got to meet some people that I'd only talked to online before, and got to go to the ocean and go to the beach. That was nice. That was a nice bonus. And so that was fun. It was nice. So yeah, cause we really haven't traveled much for conventions in that's the first one I've traveled to where it's required a hotel.
Okay. And so I was going to say, they are coming back then. The conventions are starting up again now. Yeah. Does that mean the writing time goes down?
Well, no, I'm trying to be a little smarter and not do as many as I did before.
Okay.
You know, or I'm doing some that are closer. Obviously, like I said, with my dad, it's hard to be gone. Now, he traveled with me for this one.
Okay.
Neither of us had ever been to the Gulf Coast. So we figured we'll go together. And so that was nice. But
great,
like, but I'm doing most of the stuff that I have on my schedule is stuff I can drive to do it and drive home that night.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest, like I've got one at a college. I'm doing a writer's conference at a college this Saturday. So I'll drive up Saturday morning, spend the day, drive home Saturday night. It's because it's a few hours away. It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Doing more stuff like that. I would love to get out and travel more again, but a lot of it depends on, you know, if he's up for it or or if I can get someone to stay with him, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And do you do, you said you have a lot of, you do a lot of stuff with sending out press packs. Who do you send press packs to? I'm kind of thinking for people who are listening, how do you use press packs to the best advantage?
Well, I've cultivated a list over the years of, websites that cover book news, or I also have a newsletter where people, just anybody can sign up for, newspapers, radio stations, especially local places that would, talk about books and writers. And so when I write press releases and put new books out, I send them to them. I try to reach out to as many different places, I reach out to, podcasts that, might be interested in talking to me, or so a lot of the press stuff happens in that way, where I've learned to write press releases about what the book's about, where they can find it, how they can get in touch with me, all that stuff, and send all that out. And so, but I do that to as many different places they'll accept it. And some of them never really follow up with it, but sometimes they do. And so, like, because I hear all the time, people, why are you sending it to the newspaper? And I was like, because we have a newspaper.
And, why not, kind people, of thing, yeah.
Right. People still read the newspaper. My father still reads the newspaper. And they don't, they may not run something every time I send something, but that when they do have, oh, we got space, let's talk about this guy.
Right,
so,
yeah.
And every little bit of that helps. And because you never know who your audience is or how they're going to find you. Like I said, if it works this week, it may not work next week, So it's just, you try different things and you can promote on a budget. I am not a rich man.
But you're an author with hundreds of books to your name. Surely you're rolling in money by now.
I'm rolling in something. I would not call it money. No.
You mean there's no money in writing?
There's not a lot. No, ma'am. And it's weird, when you do make money, you turn right around and put it back into the business, Because, I did this convention, and I'm like, all right, I sold some books. And then I'm like, oh man, now I got to buy some books.
Yeah. You must excuse my dogs in the background. I don't know what is going on outside. They're getting very excited.
They have questions.
I think they do. They obviously recognize it. They think, oh yeah, we've talked to him before. We'll have another chat. So talking of kind of marketing on a budget, what would be sort of three good things that somebody who is maybe just started writing could do on a low budget to get word out about their book before they publish it?
Okay. Well, obviously, the internet is a wonderful, wonderful tool. Social media is good to a point. Mm-hmm. You reach a very small audience with social media. I mean, that's the problem, is they limit who sees what you post.
Yeah.
But it is a good way to get the initial feelers out. Mm-hmm. So anything with the internet can be your friend. Find, there are people who run book blogs. There are all kinds of sites that will do author interviews. Mm-hmm. They're not going to find you. You kind of have to introduce yourself to them.
Right.
So you have to be proactive. And you can't just sit back and wait for people to find you to say, hey, I want to interview you. Yeah. Introduce yourself. Don't be pushy, but just introduce yourself. Here's who I am. Here's what I do. I would love to be part of you. I always say, if you think I'd be a good fit for your audience, because yeah. I don't. And that's also very important too, is knowing your audience. Like, I don't reach out to, because I don't write romance novels, I don't reach out to romance novelist podcasts. Yeah. That's not a good fit. So I reach out to people that cover or talk about the kind of books I write. So I do that. I offer, and a lot of times that means offering them a free book, or, here, would you like to read the book, or, things like that. So getting the word out is important. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to offer an ebook to someone, if they're interested, maybe want to write a review. Doing that is helpful. Being able to talk about your book, which I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't, it sounds like I'm bragging, but you kind of are, but when you brag as a business, it's promotion.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you have to learn to talk about your books and talk mm-hmm. about what you do. So the first thing I would say is find places that are covering what you do or are talking to authors who do what you do.
Yeah.
Reach out to them, introduce yourself. If they say, great, we'd love to talk to you, awesome. If they say thanks, but no thanks, then you say, oh, I appreciate your time, and you move on.
Yeah.
Arguing with them is never a good idea. Just take the no as an answer, because no is sometimes the answer you get. So that's a good one.
Yeah.
Reaching out locally. I love conventions, as we mentioned. Conventions are fun. Book events, get to know the people at your library, get to know the people at your local bookstore. Be prepared for disappointment when they don't care. and I don't mean that meanly. It's just like a lot of times libraries, they love you, but they're not going to carry your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, libraries, when they are looking, they are a good place to go and do author talks, for example, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I cut my teeth. When my first book came out, I was invited to speak at a very big conference, and I'd never done any speaking before. So I set up a local library tour, and mm-hmm. I think I did 6 or 7 libraries in the area. And one of them, there were maybe 12 or 13 people. One of them, there were 4. It didn't matter. It was an opportunity to go and mm-hmm. practice, if nothing else.
You know, right. So, and your name was on a sign.
Yeah. Yeah. It was on the board outside the library. It was on their website. Yeah. It went out in their newsletters, and
And there's also opportunities like I said, a lot of libraries won't buy your books because they have very limited budgets, but you can offer to give them a book, which is press of itself. Mm-hmm. You have someone take a photo of you and the librarian together holding your book. You send that to the newspaper, local author visits library.
People
are seeing it, and so even though you haven't been actively selling them anything, your name is out there associated with your book and with a library, which tells people it's a book. And so that is great to go, I wonder what this book's about, or, it's a local writer, I should check them out. Or, So never be afraid to promote local, talk to people that might know you, or, word of mouth, or, and it doesn't have to be bookstores. I think that's a thing that where people think that's where they have to stop, bookstores and libraries. Mm. Coffee shops love to promote local people.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I've done many a book reading and book signing in a coffee shop where they're like, or we have a thing here. This is a little off topic, sorry, but we have a thing here that before the pandemic, it was really gaining speed, where restaurants and bars were putting out book events during the week on their slow nights.
Okay. Mm.
And so what they would do is they would invite 4 authors to come in, do a reading. We'd all have books to sign. The restaurant, because it was a slow night, they were hoping we would bring more people in.
Yeah.
And so they made a little extra money. We had space, so we had an opportunity to talk and promote. And if we're promoting the book, I'm going to be at Frank's Barbecue Shop, and I did that one. Actually, we did once a month, there's a barbecue place. It's not close to me, but it's in South Georgia. Mm-hmm. Once a month, they do an author night, because the owner of the barbecue shop is an avid reader.
Oh,
and
okay.
She befriended one of the local authors in that area. And the two of them hatched this idea of, what if once a month we have a book night? And so he hosts it, or she hosts it, he runs it, he interviews, and so I've done it a couple times. They'll have like 3 or 4 authors come in, and we all get there. Everybody eats while you're there,
Yeah.
So the restaurant's made a little extra money on a slow mm-hmm. night.
Yeah, definitely. And then, great idea.
Yeah. Then we get up, we do our, they put us in the room for like special events.
Yeah.
So we're in the room for it. So if people that are in the restaurant, they have no interest in the book stuff, we're not bothering them. And so we have our, but we have our Q&A session, you know, he'll interview us and then questions from the audience. And then when it's over, we have books for sale. And then, you know, the restaurant takes a little cut of the book sale. So, I mean, the restaurant's making money, we're promoting. And so some different, so so there's trying different things. Yeah, yeah. Trying different things is, can sometimes be interesting. Like the first time I did one in a bar, I was like, well, this is never going to work. but I was surprised. Same kind of thing. People are there. They're buying food. They're drinking. They're having a good time. We get up. We do our readings. We have our chit chat. People are buying books. And it, but it was something I never would have thought of had I not, you know, someone not said, no, you should come do this. It'll be fun.
So
be willing to try to promote wherever you can. Different, I guess that's what I'm trying to say is try, don't just try bookstores and libraries. Look to different places that you know you can reach people. So that would be the second one. Third one. Trying to think of a good third one. You know, obviously you've got to have a good product as well. You've got to learn how to talk to people. You've got to learn how to, and it's tough. It's a learned skill. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I'm shy, I'm introverted. And I get it. When I first started, I would never have been able to do what we're doing right now. I just, I was very shy. I was very quiet. I've had to teach myself. Now I'm at the stage where people are like, man, I wish you'd shut up.
I wasn't going to say anything, but no, carry on.
So learning how to talk, practice what you're going to talk about. You know, actors don't just hop on stage and know their lines. Writers shouldn't either, you know. Know what your book's about. So when someone says, what's your book about? You don't go, oh man, what is my book about?
You just come out with a spiel straight away.
You've got the, here's what this is about, you know. So practice, you know, there's lots of places to, like I said, doing the interviews helps, you know. I've told a lot of this stuff. This is not, I don't think I've said anything today I haven't said 100 times already, so, you know. I did a convention this weekend. I was like, come on, somebody asked me a question I've never been asked before. But you do this long enough.
What's a shoe size? Yeah, there you go. I bet no one's ever asked
that. That one has never been asked.
Yes.
It is it's an 11 and a half.
Okay. So,
but every once in a while, someone will ask something I've never been asked before, but you do get a lot of the same questions.
Yeah.
You know how to answer them, you know, and we tell a lot of the same stories, you know. I learned this, oddly enough, I learned this at conventions from watching actors answer questions. Where someone gets up, asks a question, they answer the question, but then they go into whatever story they were going to tell anyway. they just make the answer roll into it.
Right. Yeah.
And after seeing some of them at multiple events, I realized that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, they've got their stories that they are going to tell, that they've rehearsed, that they've practiced.
Yeah.
And then I kind of have learned that as well. You know, someone asks a question, you answer the question, but then I've got anecdotes that fit those questions already. Like, I know these, I've told these stories. Yeah. This one works good here, and so that helps, you know, you're not struggling for trying to come up with an answer. You've built in some, which makes you look more professional and makes you look, you know, more prepared.
And I guess a lot, like you said, the kind of, think about the kind of questions people will be asking you. So it's going to be, you know, at the very basic thing, it's going to be sort of what inspired you to start writing, or you know, where did the idea for your book come from, or why did you choose to publish it the way you did? Why did you choose that cover design? There's probably kind of fairly standard questions that will come up that you can plan ahead for.
Yeah. Yeah. What inspired the book? What's the book about? Should be the first thing.
You that's true. One. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you get your ideas? What's your writing day like? You know, things like, yeah. And, yeah. And they're not bad questions, you know, and people, I mean, they're questions people generally want answers to, but yeah, like I said, I just get it a lot. So I know the answer can just spill out of me without me stopping to go, oh, gee, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, usually if you hear me go, gee, let me think about that. That means
that's a good one.
I don't have that one pre-programmed. Like I said, I do occasionally get those questions where, you know, oh, I have never thought of that, or you know, I hadn't thought of it that way, or I, you know, mm-hmm. but yeah. There are a lot of places that do, you know, if you want to start out, if you're not comfortable starting out doing video or audio, there are plenty of websites and places that do print or on their website. You know, you type the answers. Actually, there are several places that are, you know, they have just a standard list of questions. You go to their site, answer the questions, and upload them.
Okay.
And they will put it on there. And so that is good practice for getting used to talking about your book, how to talk about your book.
Because that's true. There's no pressure there, is there? It's the kind of the standard questions you'll be asked, but you haven't got that pressure of being put on the spot. So you can actually think about your answer.
Yeah, you can.
And then once you've got it down, then it will come easier the next time, won't it? When you're asked, you'll be like, oh, I know that. I know that. I've been asked that before. Yeah.
Yeah. I've typed that answer multiple times. I know. Yeah. And you can, and doing it that way too, you can edit. You can write it one way and go, ooh, that doesn't sound good. Let me redo that. Or, you know, because it's a fine line, you know, you don't want to give away too much, but you still want to entice people.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when you're talking about not the books, but the craft of writing, sometimes like on the panel at the convention, we were talking about characters and how the characters kind of will, you know, writers are all the time saying, oh, I just follow the character, or the character won't let me do that. And it's true. Once you get to know your characters, they will inform what they will and will not do.
Yeah.
And so we were on this panel talking about it, and I was like, yeah, I have a great example, but it's a spoiler. So let me try to do this as spoilerless as possible. So I'm having to think about it because I can't just blurt out what happened. So I'm going like, well, I've got this one character. Okay. And this happened in book three. And so trying to do it that way, you know, was a little interesting to come up with ways to do it without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to take that twist away from the reader, or that surprise away from the reader.
Yeah. Yeah. It was lovely, actually. I know you'd said about the characters when we spoke before, you said about the characters taking over the story, and several other authors, novel authors I've spoken to have said the same thing. And I'd always wanted to experience that for myself. And when I was writing my NaNoWriMo novel, that happened. Mm-hmm. I suddenly found that my character loved horses. Now I can't, I'm terrified of horses. So the idea that my lead lady was a big horsewoman, I was kind of, where did that come from? And how am I going to write about that now? Because I know nothing about horses, but it was just so strange that's just where it went. Yeah, it was a really lovely discovery. Really lovely.
Yeah. It's amazing when that happens too, because there's, you know, I had this one I wrote years ago, this short story. It was, we were doing stories. It was an old radio show from the 50s that they were doing new stories with, and it was going to be an audio. And so the premise was, there's this reporter that walked in Chicago, and he gets out and walks through Chicago, gets into trouble, and that's what he writes about.
Okay.
So that was the premise. It was called Nightbeat. It was an old 50s radio show. And so we were doing new stories. And so I'm writing this story, and it's a short story, so I'm thinking, oh, it's pretty cut and dry. The hero runs into an old friend who's leaving her husband. Her husband is a mobster, and he's trying to take her kid, and she's running, and he's after her. Simple. That's my story. I'm writing this story. I'm at the end to where the hero and the villain, the husband and the reporter and the husband, are finally face to face.
Yeah.
And as they're talking, I realized in their dialogue that the husband is not the bad guy. And so suddenly this, I said, well, who's the bad guy? And so this character popped into my head and says, I'm the bad guy. So I wrote it that way. I said, oh, that's a wonderful, this is a wonderful twist. I love this. It's a better ending. Let me go back. And because you know, you need clues. You don't want, I don't want things to, I love playing fair with my audience. I want, if there's a clue, they need to see it. I hate it when you get to the end of a novel or a movie and the clue that told the detective how to solve it, we didn't see.
That's just a twist and it's like, but that's just ridiculous. That just,
right.
There's no way that we have got from there to there. Yeah, just completely ruins it, doesn't it? Yeah.
So I want to play fair. If there's if I'm doing that, I want something. Now, I may be subtle with it.
Yeah.
But I want, when it happens, I want you to go, I remember that, you know, I want that. So
yeah.
I get to this ending and I make this change. So I go back. I'm like, I'm rereading it again, going, where can I put in clues? The big surprise was, as I'm reading it, the clues were already there. So as I was writing the characters, the clues were dropping before my subconscious mind was dropping the clues before my conscious mind caught up with what was going on.
Oh, wow.
And it's just one of the, but it's one of those things where the characters just, the characters being themselves led me to a better story than I would have had otherwise. And those are amazing moments. Like you said, with your character, you know, with the horses, those are, it's an amazing thing that happens that, because if it gets us, you know, then it's probably going to impact the reader.
Yeah. It was one of the things. Cause I kind of thought, I know where she starts and I know where she goes and I haven't worked out how she gets there yet. That middle bit hasn't. And it was one of those things that there were a few little cogs that just went click, 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 click. That's how she gets there. And that was one of the cogs, but certainly not pre-planned. It was just this kind of, oh my word. Okay. Yeah. Let's go with that.
It's happened to me a few times with stuff like that. There was one novel I was working on. I did a novel called Suicide Bomb. And the two protagonists are, one is a homicide detective and one's a Secret Service agent. And their cases cross. And they're both female protagonists. And they decide to work together to solve their problem. And we had been following one or both of them through the whole several chapters at this point. The way I write, this is why I don't write first person. I like to bounce around to different characters, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we need a chapter that's a break from them to come so that when we come back, they're over here, you know, they're doing something very mundane. We don't want to follow them doing. It's boring writing people doing paperwork.
Oh yeah.
So I'm like, I need a break. Plus it would be nice to take a break, get something new. And I knew I had this break-in coming where this woman is going to break into a building and stuff's going to happen, but I needed something in the middle. So I sat down and I was like, I don't know what to do here, but let me just try something. So I'll set that up. So I started writing about this guy and how he meets the woman who is the thief, how they're together and she steals his badge to get in the building. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so, but I'm like, I don't know if it fits, you know, I don't know how this guy is important to the story, and he may not be. I may have to tweak it or take it out, but
it's what
felt right that day. So I wrote this scene, and I liked it, and I kept it in, and, you know, like I said, I worked in the bit with her stealing his badge, and so if nothing else, we'll never see this guy again. You know, he's in it for the one chapter. He got robbed. We're good.
Yeah.
Four chapters later, I realized that the ex-husband, the Secret Service agent had been complaining about was this guy. So that when it's discovered, there's a break-in at his building as part of their case and they go.
Yeah.
She runs into her ex-husband and that added some tension and drama to the scene that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Yeah.
But it took me a while to consciously put all that together. And so it's just, those are those fun, happy accidents that happen when writing that are just so cool. And and a lot of times people, and when you talk to non-writers, they don't understand. They think you're crazy, you know? They look at you like you're nuts when it's like, well, how did you not know? You know?
It's almost like your subconscious knows the story better than you, isn't it?
Yeah. Or like, yeah, when it's like, I had no idea the character would do this. Or I wanted to do this, but the character decided that they didn't want to do that. Like, mm-hmm. But you're writing it. Can't you make them do it? And I was like, well, sure, I could make them. But then as a reader, you're going to go, man, these characters are acting out of character.
Yeah.
Does the writer not know what he's doing?
So
those are those wonderful, you know. And now with your character liking horses and you not being a horse person, are you now researching horses and learning more about them?
I went off and did a lot of reading. Basic things like, she was in the tack room. What is in a tack room? What needs to be in a tack room? What tools do you use when you're grooming horses? I mean, I don't know. So I had to go and do some research. Mm-hmm. And I have thought, when I get to the stage of editing it, or possibly sort of rewriting it, I will go and spend some time with horses and kind of see if I can get a bit more about it. Because at the minute, I don't know how realistic it is, because I've not been near a horse since I was 15, you know.
It's interesting. And one of the things I've discovered in writing is when it comes to research, if you can find someone that does that for a living, people love to talk about what they do.
Yeah.
You know, I write a lot of crime fiction. I've spent time talking with police officers, private detectives. I spent a day with the FBI, which was a lot of fun.
Cool.
I've talked with Secret Service agents. Before the pandemic, I was scheduled to meet with a medical examiner. I met this woman at a writer's conference who works for a medical examiner. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, yeah, come on, we'll give you a tour. And then, of course,
an autopsy?
Well, they probably wouldn't let me sit in on the autopsy, but you never know, though.
Maybe. But, from the viewing gallery.
yeah. But then, of course, you know, everything kind of went into lockdown. And so things like that kind of stall, but I do hope that eventually to get to that. I've talked with forensic photographers, you know, the people that are first on the scene. I've talked to guys that do that. I've, you know, talked with firefighters and ambulance drivers and doctors and people. I'm very impressed that people are very happy to, I'll tell you whatever you want to know about my job.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had anybody say no. I've had people say not now. But I've never had anybody say, no, I don't want to talk about that. So but it's great. So I've cultivated over the years. I've made wonderful friendships with people. You know, if I need to know what it's like to interrogate a suspect, I have a writer friend who was a retired LAPD investigator. Hey, does this make sense? I've got, you know, I can ask.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is a judge. You know, I have a friend who, you know, so it's like getting to, and those are just for the crime stuff. But
yeah,
I know people that are in the air conditioning and heating business because, you know, that's, you never know when that's going to come in, you know, handy.
Very true. Yeah.
I've certainly had my personal experiences, you know, working in different types of businesses over the years. I worked in a warehouse, so I understand how warehousing works. So if I ever have anything in a warehouse, I can, you know, have it kind of be realistic.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's whatever genre you write in, even if you're writing in fantasy, you need your world to work. And if there's things that start sounding unrealistic in whatever genre it is, it takes the reader out of the book, doesn't it? And then they start going, well, that wouldn't happen, or that doesn't happen like that. And then once that starts happening, you kind of lose them. It's making that world, however unrealistic the world is even, making it as realistic as possible within that world, so that the reader's sucked into it, so that they are fully immersed in the experience. And I guess the more you know about the world that your novels inhabit, the more realistic you can make them, and the more the reader will then get sucked in, because it's all utterly believable, even when it's not.
Oh, absolutely. Because even science fiction and fantasy, even though you're doing these worlds that don't exist, there's a basis of stuff that can be found in the real world. I don't write a lot of fantasy, but I have friends that write a lot of fantasy stuff. And when they're doing things like the castles and or the land or the whatever area, you start with something real. You know, you want to have a castle. Okay, we have real castles here. Start with what a castle is, because your reader has in their mind, when you say castle,
an image of,
yes, there is an image that pops in your head. When you do things like if for science fiction, if you like Star Wars, for example, as fantastical as all of that stuff is, they have a Senate. You know what a Senate is. They have an emperor. We've all heard, we know what an emperor is. You've had, you know, Star Trek, there's a military thing. So you've got that basis, you know?
Yeah.
Because like Star Trek, Starfleet really is the Navy, because that's what they based it on.
Yeah.
And so you start with that thing that is recognizable and you build on it, and your audience will, even if they don't realize that it's based on the Navy, they get what Starfleet is because it's something familiar from the world. And so you can build fantastical things on these real life, you know, things. And that helps your reader, anything that helps connect your reader to it.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. It's that connection, isn't it? It's making sure that the reader feels connected to it, and then they'll want to read on. So I've just looked at the time. We're running out of time here.
I can ramble.
No, that's all right. No, it's been fascinating. I love talking to you. It's been just as much fun this time as last time. But before we go, what are you working on at the minute?
I am currently working on, I have my two series in development. The Sheriff Myers, I think we talked about that, was just coming out last year or was about to come out. I'm working on book three now. those are still going well. The Snow books are still going. But I'm also working on a few side things. I just put out Evil Intent, which is the sequel to my very first novel.
Okay.
It only took 15 years.
I got there in the end.
but yeah, I eventually finished it. I'm with my serialized stuff on Patreon. I'm doing Deadly Deals, which is a sequel to Deadly Games, which is another book that's been taking a while. And I just finished the Lance Star Skyranger novel that I then sent off to the publisher. So it'll be out sometime. But this year I've also been doing, I've picked up several like work for hire gigs for publishers.
Okay.
I just finished a Zorro story last week.
Cool.
So that was fun. You know, it's sometimes fun to play with the characters you grew up watching, you know. Recently I got to write a Lone Ranger story. I loved the Lone Ranger when I was a kid, so that was
fun. I think
fun.
You mentioned that one last time, the Lone Ranger. But yeah, that was a big sort of childhood thing of yours. So that was a real honor to be working with that character,
Yeah, so that was fun. And I've done some stuff for some other companies with their with their characters that'll be out whenever. So I'm always doing that. And then, so that's actually what I'm in the process of this week, and the rest of this week is doing that. I've got several projects on the books. I'm doing a horror Western for a publisher. I wrote a short story for an anthology for them last year that took place. It was called The Devil's Due, and was the anthology. And it was all about deals with demons or devils, or, you know, you make these deals and there's always a price to pay for making those kind of deals. I wrote this story. Set in the Old West, about this town where these demons had to escape the place they needed, and they needed a place. Yeah. So the deal they made was for this place. So they find this rich piece of Arizona, you know, where they find a silver mine. Well, now things have come due, and so there's a problem. Blah blah blah. We tell the story. Well, the publisher liked it so much they've asked me to do a novel.
Oh, cool.
Set in that town. So I'm working on that. Which is fun. They kind of want, I talked to him yesterday, and he's like, if that one does well, we'd probably want to do another novel next year. And I'm like, oh, well, cool.
Yeah, definitely. Bring it on.
work is work, you know? And so I'm doing that, and I'm working on Snow Book 7 now. And I'm also working on the fourth book of the Hunter Houston Horror Hunter series, which is a comedy horror series.
Okay.
The first book is out now. The second book is about to come out. Mm. And I'm writing book four now. And
as that far sounds as, fun.
Unless they do really well, there'll be four of them. If they do well, we may do more, but we're contracted for four. And it's a spinoff of my buddy John Hartness writes a book called Bubba the Monster Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And my book is a spinoff of his. In one of the sets of books, they do it like novellas and they do it like seasons. And one of the stories is his team disappears. Now, if you read their book, you know where they go and this adventure they're having. But here in our world, all we know is they're gone. And so someone has to step up and take on the responsibility of dealing with these big monster problems. My guy, Houston, was used to dealing with the small problems. He was happy to be the guy, the number two guy, because you don't have to work so hard, you know? So now he's having to step up and deal with these bigger problems, and he's not happy because he doesn't want to work that hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. So
it's just keep you busy for the sound of it.
Yeah, so I've got those. And then there's a few other projects sprinkled in.
Yeah.
I've always, as you know, ideas come to you all the time. So I'm always jotting, I want to do this. I don't know when I'm going to do it. You know, so I have to keep, when I started, when writing was a hobby, I just wrote what I wanted when I wanted and everything was good. Now there's spreadsheets and whiteboards and I got a list over here and I've got notes scribbled on sticky notes stuck to everything. And but so I have to keep this because deadlines are a big factor in my life.
Yeah.
Now. So I have it all, here's the list of what needs to be done. Here's when it needs to be done.
Yeah.
So here's when you need to be working on it. Because, as writers, I can't speak for you, but I know for me, I push it to the limit every, I turned in the Zorro story early. That may be the first story I've ever turned in early.
It sounds like despite all the work and all the admin that goes with it, it sounds like you're still loving the life of a writer.
I do. I love what I do. I wish it paid better.
Yeah.
But you know what? I am very fortunate. I get up, I get to do this all day, I get to, I don't have to fight traffic every day to go to a job I don't like. Like any other job, there are days I don't want to do it. There are days I have to make me sit down and work because I'd rather do anything else. It happens. I mean, it's every job.
Busy,
you know,
being busy.
I'm,
that's the word.
Yeah. So, but I love what I do. There are perks to what I've done. I have met some incredible people.
Yeah.
Over the years of this. Most of my friends, are people I've met through doing conventions or, being a writer or whatever. I've met a lot of wonderful people that I might not have met otherwise without this stuff. I get to travel, travel is fun. During the pandemic, one of the strange things that happened, being cooped up, we all get stir crazy. my father and I decided that what we would do is at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, we would get in the car and just go. We would travel. We don't go anywhere, we would just go.
Road trips.
Spend the day on the road. So we've gone to some very interesting places that we've never been before. And so it is not uncommon to see me with the camera, with the cell phone. Ooh, that would be a good place to put a scene. We traveled one time. We ended up in the highlands of North Carolina, North Carolina highlands. It's very mountainy, curvy, road. There's waterfalls. Gorgeous. I'd never been there before.
That's good. Yeah.
I'm taking pictures. Now, when I get to my sixth snow book, I knew I needed him in a mountainous area.
Mm-hmm.
So it became that area. So I had all these photographs of this area that I could use as reference when I wrote wrote the story, I could, it was easier to picture it in my head because it's a real place. And so that there's a lot of that. I took a lot, I've taken a lot of photos going like, ooh, something cool could happen here. Or, you know, I write a lot of crime fiction, man, we could find a body over there. We could hide a body over here.
It's amazing where the inspiration can come from, isn't it? My setting for my, my novel, my NaNoWriMo novel, I knew it was going to be in Portugal. Basically, it's a middle-aged woman runs away to Portugal. It's not in the least bit autobiographical. She's not me, I promise.
But there's a little bit of what you know in there, right?
Exactly. There's a little bit of what I know, yeah. And some of the places were places that I knew. And I my mum came over to stay about 18 months ago. And we went off for a drive. We went up to the mountain, Serra da Estrela, the highest mountain in mainland Portugal. And when we were coming back down, as we were coming down this windy road, we got to a corner. And there's a lot of ruins and derelict houses in Portugal for all sorts of reasons. There was this beautiful derelict house on the corner with a mill. And it was just absolutely stunning. And I made a note of it to go back and look at it another day. Now, when I was writing the novel, I thought, let me just find it on Google Maps. And I tracked it down and I did the street view and I could walk up past the house and I could see there was a little cross at one side and I could see all these details. And I was like, do you know, this is derelict, but this is going to feature. And it turns out that is, in fact, quite an important aspect of the, So, and get inspiration from everywhere, wherever you are, you can just pick things up.
Yeah. And because you saw it, there's other, your other senses add things to it. Like, you know, there's a, I can describe things, you know, off the top of my head and make stuff up. But if I saw this derelict house, there's emotions and feelings that go with that, that now that adds another layer to the work. And so it's, like I said, I'm a big fan of research and I love all that kind of stuff, getting out and checking out places. And, you know, I live next to a state park. When I invented the town that's in Snow and Evoys and such, and the Sheriff Myers, I invented this town, which is very much my town. I don't know why I didn't just use my town, but I invented this town, I guess because I wanted a few things that my town didn't have.
Right, yeah.
But we live next to a state park, so there's a state park in the stories. And so when I have action happening at the state park, I've walked over and walked it out, you know, if we're having a shootout here or if we're having a chase here.
Yeah. Where do they go? What happens? How does it work? Yeah.
I can walk it. And while I'm walking it in my head, I'm playing the scenes and, you know, this guy's shooting from here. You know, if people look at me, they think I'm insane because not only am I over there doing stuff like this, you know, I'm talking to myself and taking pictures of, you know, weird things, but I can walk it out and that gives it an extra, I don't know, something, you know, that just, that elevates it from just me going, oh, they walked across the bridge. I can give it a little more something because I know
emotion and feeling.
Like. I've walked that bridge. I know what that bridge sounds like.
Yeah.
I know what that bridge smells like. I know it sways a little. Okay. That's a detail I hadn't thought of, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, yeah. So anything you can, I mean, you know, you can write without doing all of that, obviously, but, you know, I do find it adds an extra layer getting out and experiencing some of the stuff you're writing about. And
so again, it's creating that world that your readers can fall into, isn't it? So you're not just saying they walked down the road and walked across the bridge. You're actually putting the reader on that bridge. So they are there as well. And that's the beauty of books, isn't it? That they take you away from your life and they put you into another world. And that sounds like a really good way of creating that world, actually having the physical world that you can fall into it.
If it feels real to you, and if it feels real to you as the writer, it will feel real to the reader.
Definitely. Yeah. We are going to have to wrap this up now because we've been talking for an hour and 10 minutes. I think it's the longest one on record. As usual,
I have that record on many shows now. I can talk.
Yeah. It's been fascinating talking to you again. Sorry about the dogs earlier. I know your main two websites are bobbynash.com and benbooks.com. Ben-books.com. I'll put all the links in the show notes so people can go and find you wherever they are, and your Patreon one as well, which is obviously a big thing now. Do this again next year?
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
We'll make it. We'll make it a yearly date.
Yeah. I think so. Bobby, it's been fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Allison. It was great to be here.
Bobby for being my guest on the podcast today. You can find his books on Amazon. Just search for Bobby Nash, and there are a whole host of websites where you can find out more about him, including bobbynash.com and ben-books.com, and I'll put the full list in the show notes. You can find out more about me and the services I offer authors on my website, theproofferry.com. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with information on how you could be a guest on the show. If you like this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, review it, and tell your friends about it. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with my dogs. Thanks, guys. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.